Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 753, Amani. Those of us who are fortunate to be in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, we're very much aware of this term, Amani, as it is one of the prime qualities that Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described for eligibility for chanting the holy names. Trunadapi suni chena tororiva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadaharihi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that one who is or considers himself lower than straw in the street, who is more tolerant than a tree, is amani, not desiring honor or not proud, and manadena, who gives honor to others, such a person is eligible to always chant the name of Hari. So amani means not proud. The prefix in Sanskrit, a, gives the sense of negation. So not proud. In other words, humble. Why should God be humble? What need is there for him to be humble? What purpose does it serve? There's no need for him to be humble. What purpose does it serve? He has no purpose to fulfill. He is like that. That's his nature. He doesn't get anything out of being humble. Sometimes people are humble, apparently, because they want to get something from us. Or they're afraid of us. Someone who behaves humbly, it's often out of fear of someone or because they want to get something from them. But Krishna's not afraid of anyone. And he doesn't want to get anything from them. So we can understand that his humility is for real. I've several times seen devotees who join in the beginning, they're very humble, and later on they become very proud. It means the humility in the beginning wasn't really very deep, because when they got in a position where they could lauded over others, or where humility was no longer in their scheme of understanding things necessary for their advantage, and then they gave it up. So sycophantic humility is not real humility. There's no need for God to be humble, but he is like that, because he wants to relate with everyone and he genuinely appreciates others. He genuinely appreciates his devotees, especially. He can be very dominating and angry at non-devotees, but with his devotees, there's acting on an equal level, or sometimes even Krishna takes a position less than his devotees, because he appreciates them and he wants to relate to them. You can't relate to someone in love if you take a very high position above them. We find in Mahabharata, Drona wanted to be the friend of Drupada. He was in childhood the friend. But later Drona became an indigent Brahmana, and Drupada became a massively opulent king. So when Drona later approached Drupada in a spirit of friendship, Drupada scornfully rejected that friendship and say, how can there be friendship between equals? He wasn't humble. And the story goes on. Drona forced him to be humble by having him captured. And but the point is that, yeah, forced him to be humble, that humility wasn't innate. It didn't come from the heart. Even in the material world, if someone is very big and nevertheless is kind to others and treats them with affection, with appreciation, well, that is very much appreciated by others. We find in the description of Lord Rama before his coronation was about to take place. And Dasharath asked his minister, because he said, I want to coronate Ram tomorrow. Yes, everyone agreed. He said, well, you don't just agree, tell me why. And the various ministers, they gave their reasons why we should have Ram as the king. And one reason is, or the prince regent, is that everyone loves him, because even though he's so great, he really cares for everyone. And he can talk to, he doesn't just talk to the high class, high society people, but he'll talk with ordinary people also. So that's very much appreciated. It may be taken as a sign of weakness by persons of demoniac nature. If they see that someone who is powerful is nevertheless willing to come down to the level of others, and not condescendingly, in a spirit of openness, they may take that, well, that's a sign of weakness. Well, he shouldn't do that. But actually, it's a sign of godliness, if it's genuine. And this is the point in Krishna and in Rama, is genuine, because he's got nothing to gain from them. There is a saying, I don't know the origin of it, that the character of a person can be judged by how he deals with people from whom he has nothing to gain. That often can't be seen until someone gets into a high post. And therefore, another saying that power corrupts, because one may seem to be very equitable in his dealings, but then when he gets the opportunity to lord it over others, he becomes a fiend. But actually, it's not really power. Power corrupts the behavior, but it doesn't necessarily corrupt the mind, as just bring out the innate demoniac propensities. This is not seen in Krishna. This is the point here. He's humble. Now, before discussing this point about him not being proud, according to the description of the acharyas, I'm going to, first of all, give a meaning of the name given by Sri Satyadeva Vasishta. And those who regularly listen to this series of talks that I'm giving will know that Satyadeva Vasishta, he regularly gives unexpected meanings to the names, often different to the standard interpretation given by others. So I'm going to fast forward to Satyadeva Vasishta's interpretation. He gives the understanding of this name as Amani means he who is beyond measure in all respects. So mana means measure, can also mean measure, as well as with the meaning that we'll give, the meaning of pride, it also means to measure. So it means immeasurable. His strength is immeasurable, his beauty is immeasurable, his qualities are immeasurable. All his qualities are immeasurable. So that is the same as Aprameya, a name of Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, which we've already discussed. In other words, he's beyond the scope of definition. So this understanding is a standard definition of God. But I've given it first because before the not proud meaning, before getting into discussing the Acharya's discussion of the not proud meaning, I've given this first because it establishes he is God. He is supreme. He is in a category different to all of us, and so different, so great, that he is immeasurable by us. He's in a completely different category, but he's not proud. So that brings home the point. If someone has nothing and he's not proud, well, that's understandable. Although, as Srila Prabhupada noted, that in Kali Yuga, even a pauper is proud of his penny. Srila Prabhupada used this saying, even a pauper is proud of his penny. And so it's not necessarily that not having anything to be proud of results in not being proud. It can be that someone is nothing really very special in any way whatsoever, but has a very proud nature nevertheless. Well, Krishna is just the opposite. He's got everything to be proud of, being superior to everyone in all respects, but still he's not proud. And it's a very endearing facet of his personality. And it's maybe one reason why the impersonalists, they don't like to accept the reality of Vishnu, Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When they see his pastimes and see that, well, he just seems to be like an ordinary person. How can he be God? How can he be supreme? He doesn't seem to be supreme. Sometimes he seems to be supreme, but a lot of other times he doesn't. Vishoka, this is one of the qualities of the liberated soul mentioned in Chandogya Upanishad, without lamentation. But sometimes it seems that Krishna becomes subject to lamentation, apparently. Vimrityu is another of the qualities. This is for a liberated soul, not for God, just for a liberated soul. He's beyond death, and Krishna appears to die. So Krishna is a mystery for the materialists, and the fact that impersonalists can't understand this gives an insight into their actually materialistic outlook, because they can't accept the inconceivable nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Jiva Goswami comments that the first and essential factor in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that he's inconceivable. He has inconceivable potencies. But the impersonalists, they instead want, because their theory makes no sense whatsoever, that Brahman is one, but somehow or other there is avidya, which manifests the whole material world. And then, well, where's the oneness? Where's the oneness? And how can you say there's one when you say there's a material condition and there's the liberated condition? And then they say that the world doesn't really exist. But then how do you get liberated from it? Well, it does exist and it doesn't exist. That's what they say. It exists and it doesn't exist. And how do you explain that? Anivachaniya. It is indescribable. So instead of accepting beyond words, the anivachaniya, so instead of accepting the potency of the Supreme Lord as inconceivable, they accept their own theory as inconceivable because it doesn't make any sense. Actually, they're just mundane, that's all. That just goes to show, because they can't accept the the full nature of the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not just all-powerful, but he's all-humble also. Anor Aniyan, Mahato Mahiyan. This is actually a description of the jiva. That's generally how it's understood from the Katha Upanishad. But it's applicable to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's smaller than the smallest and greater than the greatest. He's so small. Andantara Paramanu Chayantara Stam. He enters into the atoms. At the same time, he shows the universal form. The whole universe rests in him. And he's not proud. How can you be God and not proud? The Mayavadis, when they think they've become God, they become very proud. They are not God. Actual God is the greatest. And when God has a quality, a humility, then he becomes the most humble. Doesn't become, as we use that word, English word, become. He is the most humble, eternally. It means that he's unconcerned about being respected by others. It doesn't mean if the impersonalists and others deride him, in one sense he doesn't mind. Just like what does a mountain care, even at the lashing of the greatest storm? What does a elephant care if you hit it hard with a flower? Holding a flower stalk and hit the elephant hard. What does it matter to an elephant? So what does it matter to the Supreme Lord? Whatever anyone says about him. Intrinsically, he's not moved. But on the other hand, he is a person and he has feelings. He doesn't care if the foolish people deride him. He doesn't care for his own sake. He cares for their sake. What are they doing? They're spoiling them. Spoiling their opportunity of human life. Young Brahma, Varunendra, Rudra, Maruta, Stunvanti Divyai, Stavai. All the great gods worship Krishna. And foolish people who can't even control their toothache, they deride Krishna. Examples of his humility. There are so many. The Parashara Bhatta gives the example of his becoming a messenger for the Pandavas. When he went as an emissary from the Pandavas who was camped at the kingdom of Virat. Krishna volunteered to go as a messenger to Hastinapur to bring a message to Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, Dushasana, and the other 98 brothers. Well, you can include one more if we include Yuyutsu. Yuyutsu, yeah. Then, and who else was there? Karna was there, and Bhishma was there, Vidura was there. So the message, he went to convey the message, peace message. Krishna knew they wouldn't accept it, his message of peace. But anyway, Krishna, he thought, better we try anyway. It's at least our duty to try. And Krishna knew he would have to suffer indignities. It was a tense situation. Duryodhana wanted to capture him, but Krishna went anyway. Another, maybe the most famous example, is Krishna becoming a charioteer for Arjuna. A charioteer is a very low position, generally considered a low position. Karna was considered low-born because he was mistakenly understood to be the son of Adhirat, the charioteer. So it's a Shudra position. Although we do find that also, for instance, Shalya was an expert charioteer and a brilliant military general and fighter also. So one who's expert in chariot fighting generally has to be good at handling horses also, because if your charioteer gets killed, then you have to handle the horses yourself. Krishna, before becoming the charioteer of Arjuna, at Arjuna's request, Kurukshetra had previously been his charioteer when Arjuna, at the request of Agnidev and in defiance of all the other demigods, including and especially Indra's Arjuna's father Indra, when Arjuna did this, Krishna became Arjuna's charioteer. The whole forest was set ablaze so that Agni, who had got indigestion from eating so much ghee being offered to him in the fire of sacrifice, he wanted to eat this forest. Eating means you digest with fire, so burn the forest, which had so many medicinal herbs. So to facilitate this, Arjuna, he ran swiftly around the forest in his chariot and shooting arrows at any animals that tried to escape, making a net of arrows over the forest so that Indra's rain could not penetrate. And while he was doing this, while Arjuna was doing this, Krishna drove his chariot. That Krishna became as if an equal or even subordinate to the Pandavas is mentioned several times in the Bhagavatam. In the first canto, 9th chapter, 20th verse, Bhishma addresses Yudhishthira Maharaj, "O king, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin, your very dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc., is that very personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna." Later on in the first canto, Maharaj Parikshit heard that out of his causeless mercy, Lord Krishna, Vishnu, who is universally obeyed, hukam chalega, what he says is obeyed. He's universally obeyed, but he took orders. Becoming a servant means you take orders from the Pandavas. Vishnu, who is universally obeyed, rendered all kinds of service to the malleable sons of Pandu by accepting posts ranging from chariot driver to president to messenger, friend, night watchman, etc., according to the will of the Pandavas, obeying them like a servant and offering obeisances like one younger in years. When he heard this, Maharaj Parikshit became overwhelmed with devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. Then I'll quote from the fifth canto, and I'll quote the Sanskrit because it is not very often, but quite often quoted verse, and Srila Prabhupada particularly quoted the last line of this verse fairly often. Rajan patir guru ralang bhavatam yadunam daivang priya kulapati kvacha king karovaha astveva manga bhagavan bhajatang mukundo mukting dadati karhi chitsmana bhakti yogam. Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, who of course is related to the Pandavas as the successor on the throne and the grandson of Arjuna and the grandson of the grand nephew of Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King, the Supreme Person, Mukunda, is actually the maintainer of all the members of the Pandava and Yadu dynasties." Because he's saying this particularly because Parikshit was related with the Pandava. He was in the Pandava line himself, directly, and via his mother, he was in the Yadu dynasty also. His mother's grandmother, Subhadra. "He's your spiritual master, worshipable deity, friend, and the director of your activities. To say nothing of this, he sometimes serves your family as a messenger or servant." This means he worked just as ordinary servants do. "Those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily, but he does not very easily give the opportunity to render direct service to him." Being a servant in this regard, you can recall the fact that at the Rajasuya sacrifice organized by Yudhishthira Maharaj, the purpose is to establish the position of the king who performs it as the emperor all over the world, but Yudhishthira Maharaj specifically wanted to organize that to show the greatness of Krishna. But Krishna himself, at the sacrifice, because it's a big thing and everyone has to pitch in their bit and everyone had to do something, so Krishna, they all had to volunteer services, so Krishna, he volunteered to wash the feet of the incoming guests. Humility. Karna was in charge of giving charity because he's known for that. Datta Karna, generosity in giving charity. Bhima was in charge of the food distribution, cooking. So Krishna took a very humble position. And even though he is supreme, he doesn't act like that, and he doesn't even show like that. When he takes the humble position, when we say take humble position, we often say that to mean that someone takes a humble position because they're forced to do so, or they're obliged to do so. But Krishna takes that position, and he doesn't think, actually I'm God, but you know, I'm being humble. He doesn't think like that, because he doesn't have that kind of egoism, and then we'll come to that. Prestige, standing on your prestige, egoism. How can you have a loving relationship with someone if you're always maintaining a sense of prestige? Now, that is there. Let me qualify that statement, because one can be just like a parent is to be respected by the children, but it's a loving relationship also. But it's not, so there is the prestige and the respect of the parents in relation to the children, but at the same time, the parent will clean up the stool of the child when they're a baby. It's very intimate, which means that it's not, respect is there, but at the same time, it's not formal. That's the point. It's not very formal. Sometimes the parent may be, especially the father to the son, may become very formal if the son is to be punished. But otherwise, even though respect is there, it can be often the father wants to play with the son and do things together. The father relives his youth by playing with the son and showing him how to do various things. He takes pleasure, just like his father showed him how to do basic archery. So the father, we're talking about kshatriyas here. So the father will show the son, and later the son will go to his guru to learn these things. Or the father may be the guru also in these matters. At least we saw with Drona and Ashwatthama. Drona was the military guru of his son Ashwatthama and of all the great heroes. The main fighters at Kurukshetra, most of them were all disciples of Drona, and Drona himself was, of course, there. Even it's stated here, I don't know what the source, but in this commentary coming from Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, in the house of the Pandavas, Krishna would do menial services like washing the horses, cleaning the house. Another example given, he became the security guard, the watchman of Bali Maharaj. Another way in which he's, the next meaning given is that he's free from abhiman. The word abhiman is very similar to mana, but it gives the sense of identifying oneself with a certain situation and being proud of that. Or it may not be pride. It may be just a sense of self-identity. But in the material world, if one identifies with this body, that is a mistake. Abhiman and ahankar, the two words, are often used simultaneously. The word ahankar is better known, but they're often used synonymously, not simultaneously. Synonymously, although they have somewhat different meanings. Ahankar is the sense of I-ness by which one conceives of oneself as I, and abhiman, it's very similar how one conceptualizes oneself. And that often gives rise to pride. Abhiman is also can be used as a synonym of pride. Dambho, darpo, bhimanascha, krodh. The symptoms of the demons given in Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna. Pride, arrogance, conceit. Here, Damba, Darpa, Abhiman, which are all synonyms of pride, they have been, but somewhat subtle differences. So they have been translated here as pride, arrogance, and conceit. Shankaracharya says that Abhiman means he's, Amani means he doesn't have this sense of identifying himself with any material situation. He doesn't, this abhiman, that can be to have, identify oneself with one's false designations. I am Thomas Smith, I am age 25, I am an American, I am a resident of Detroit, Michigan. I am a medical student. In so many ways, these are designations which are relevant to our present position in time and space, in a great universe, in the great flow of time. But Krishna doesn't have any such false designations. I'm interpreting a little bit Shankara's interpretation, because it's somewhat impersonalistic, as can be, it can be taken like that. But Krishna, his designations are all real and true and eternal. Therefore, he doesn't have the pride of, or the mistake of associating himself with his material body, because he doesn't have a material body. another way, this freedom from pride, I'll go to what the Madhva Sampradaya offers us in this regard. Amani vishayeshu abhimana rahita shiriradi abhimana hinatvat. Vishnu is called Amani because he has no attachment into the worldly or connected matters. And in this regard, they quote from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 22, Name parthasti karatavyam tushu lokeshu kinchana nana vaptam avaptavyam vartaiva chakarmani. In all the three worlds, in all the three phases of time, there is nothing to be achieved by Krishna. Everything's already with him. And so he does not need to do any work whatsoever. But still he does so only to set an example to others, but not out of compulsion or desire to achieve anything as in the case of others. So in this way, he's not attached to worldly matters, but still he acts within this world. Madhvacharya citing Mandukya Upanishad in this regard. Devas yaivas svabhavo yam asakamasya ka spriha. He creates, he benefits others, not that he's got anything to gain from it. There's no particular, but he just does it to fulfill the desires of others. So where is the question of abhiman or attachment to this material world for him? Therefore, he's called Amani. Other examples of how he acts for the benefit of the world without being attached to it and without being proud. He takes even the form of a boar, a pig, or a fish, or a tortoise, animal-like forms, lower forms. Apparently, they're not lower because they're Vishnu. But he doesn't feel any shame. He doesn't think, well, I can't take the form of a pig. I'm God. He takes the form. And even he goes into the dirty place with water dripping all over him. He doesn't care because he wants to uplift his dearly beloved wife, the earth. So for her sake, even if others will criticize him, he accepts a role just doing the needful for his devotees. He becomes the sun. The sun, S-O-N, becomes the sun, famously, of Kashyap, and Aditi becomes the son of Dasharath and Kausalya. Dasharath and Dasharath and Kaikeyi, yeah, also. And becomes the son of Devaki and Vasudev and Nanda and Yashoda and Jagannath Mishra, Sati Devi. So he becomes as if an ordinary human, and he serves his parents and takes a subordinate position to them. Even though he's big, he's the big, very big man. But his pleasure is not in being big. People want to be big in this world. But where's the pleasure in being big? When people become big, they may become proud, but they're not really happy. The real pleasure is in loving others. And that's what Krishna comes to show us, especially in the form of Rama and Krishna, and especially in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears as Advaita also. And he says, Advaita Prabhu, who is Mahavishnu avatar, he says, Chaitanya Das Amui, Chaitanya Das, Chaitanya Dasa Moitar Dasa Das. He says, I am the servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am the servant of Lord Chaitanya. He says it twice. And then he says, three times. He says, I'm the servant, and then I'm the servant of his servant. Saying this, Advaita dances and loudly sings. He takes, although he's the Supreme Lord himself, the greatest of the great, he takes pleasure in being the servant of the Supreme Lord. Baladev Vidyabhushan gives the understanding that he accomplishes his devotees' affairs. He does so many amazing things for the sake of his devotees, but he doesn't get all proud about it. And again, Baladev gives the example of how he accepts menial tasks in the service of his devotees. And in this regard, Baladev quotes from Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Text 22. Uddhava to Vidura. When I think of Lord Krishna, how he was born in the prison house of Vasudeva, although he is unborn, how he went away from his father's protection to Vraja and lived there incognito out of fear of the enemy, and how, although unlimitedly powerful, he fled from Mathura in fear. All these bewildering incidents give me distress. Uddhava says, gives me distress because now Krishna has left this world. So he does all these things as if he's an ordinary person. He does that for the pleasure of his devotees. I will quote some more from that same third canto, chapter 2. Not quoted by Baladev Vidyabhushan, but I'll quote it anyway. It's all in the same. Baladev's commentary is very succinct. He just gives a few points very briefly. But in the same vein, Lord Krishna begged pardon from his parents for their, Krishna's and Balaram's, inability to serve their parents' feet due to being away from home because of great fear of Kamsa. Krishna said, O mother, O father, please excuse us for this inability. All this behavior of the Lord gives me pain at heart. This is again Uddhava to Vidura. Does it not pain us, his servitors, when we remember that he, Lord Krishna, used to stand before King Ugrasena, who was sitting on the royal throne, and submit explanations before him, saying, O my Lord, please let it be known to you. Gives pain in the sense remembering Krishna. Oh, how wonderful Krishna, how pleasing he is to our heart, that he behaves in such a humble way, ingratiating way, and now he's passed away. Some synonyms for proud. There are many, just a few. Puffed up, that was one that Srila Prabhupada often used. Too big for your boots, full of yourself, big-headed, high and mighty, swollen-headed. And some synonyms or close synonyms, modest, humble, self-effacing. So as aspiring devotees, we want to imbibe this quality of the Supreme Lord. We can't imbibe the quality of being the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of unlimited universes, or being the center of love for all living beings, but we can imbibe this quality of being modest, humble, and self-effacing. How can we do that? Well, just first thing, first lesson of Bhagavad Gita, if we understand we're not this body, then immediately. because the mundane pride is associated with our mundane, our identification with the mundane body that we presently inhabit. And then we presume that I'm better than others' mundane bodies and mundane minds and mundane positions. And become proud of that. But if the first thing we understand, I'm not this body, then where does the question of pride arise? And particularly if we understand that we are dependent on Krishna, who is so great and we're so small, then our ego can be, this false ego can be smashed, even from the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita. And as we go on studying Bhagavad Gita, we can understand that not only am I not this body, but I am completely dependent on Krishna, who is so much greater than me. And when we've understood how great, when we've understood to some extent how great Krishna is, then we can begin to understand how great is this quality of his humility, when he has absolutely no need to be humble whatsoever, but still he is like that, out of love for his devotees. This is more inconceivable than him being the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of millions of universes. All glories to Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let us always bow down to his lotus feet. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nidhaya trinakang padaya nepatya kripa Vacha kakushata meta da hambra vimi. Hey, sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat. Gauranga chandra charane kurutanu ragaha. Parivadatu janaya tatatava nanu mokarona vayang vichara yamaha. Hari rasa madira madati matta bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.